You're listening to the Recipe for Radiance podcast. I'm your host, Morgan Taddeo, and I'm so excited to provide you with a space where you get the nourishment to create a life that feels radiant and meaningful to you. Recipe for Radiance is where we celebrate individual journeys, honor our inner wisdom, and cultivate a supportive environment for growth and transformation. Hello, and welcome back to another episode of the Recipe for Radiance podcast. I am so grateful that you're here today, and I am really excited to dive into today's episode. Today's guest is Dr. Frank Ayeda. He is a licensed naturopathic physician with over 20 years of experience in helping patients uncover and treat acute and chronic illnesses by supporting the body's inherent ability to heal itself. He is not somebody who is working to suppress symptoms. He is going to identify the underlying causes of illness and develop personalized treatment plans to address them. He is not only an incredible naturopath practicing in the space for his patients, but he has truly been a wonderful mentor for me as a holistic health coach on my personal journey of building my practice. I think you guys are going to learn a lot from him today. We dive into all things female hormone health, which has been a highly requested topic. So I think you're really gonna enjoy. You're gonna wanna have your notes app open, maybe a notebook and a pen too. I'm telling you, this one is good and you're gonna wanna take those notes. All right, let's dive in, shall we? I am so grateful that you're here today, and I'm really excited for this conversation to unfold. I'd love for you to start out by sharing a little bit about you and what you do.
My name is Dr. Frank Ayeda. I'm a licensed and board-certified naturopathic physician with a private practice here in West Hartford, Connecticut, going into my 23rd year of practice. So I kind of got into the field early on. I always had a passion for nutrition and diet and lifestyle and exercise. And my undergraduate degree was from UConn. I graduated with a degree in nutritional science and a minor in exercise science. So that was a nice segue into naturopathic medicine. So I got my degree at the University of Bridgeport in Bridgeport, Connecticut. And then I went on and did a little bit of training in acupuncture and started a private practice in 2002. So, you know, what led me to the field also was, you know, dealing with my own health concerns as a young guy. I always had allergies, asthma, digestive issues, and my parents took me to every doctor under the sun, and they just pumped me full of different drugs and pushed me on my way. And it wasn't until later on when I got into undergrad and I started doing a lot of research. Back then, this was like even before, you know, research was able to be done through the internet. You know, I was in the UConn library kind of pulling stuff and figuring things out, reading a lot of books. And I found that, you know, just by altering my diet, taking some dietary supplements, taking some nutrients, I was able to basically get my allergy and asthma symptoms and digestive symptoms almost 100% under control. And a lot of it hinged upon, you know, changes in diet, just getting rid of foods that I was sensitive to or actually allergic to. You know, dairy was a big one, gluten was a big one. And once I got rid of those foods, it was like, wow, I'm not sick all the time and I can breathe and my sinuses are not always congested and I'm not having to run to the bathroom all the time because my stomach was a mess. So that kind of opened my eyes that, you know, there is a time and place I feel for conventional medicine, but when it comes to chronic illness and chronic disease, it really misses the mark. So I kind of pride myself on practicing more individualized wellness-based medicine. So it's not the cookie cutter approach to medicine like conventional medicine does. You know, if you get hit by a car, you're having a heart attack, yeah, go to the hospital and then we'll deal with the after effects afterwards. But you know, the first line of defense shouldn't be a drug.
I have to say, one of my favorite things about doing this podcast is learning people's whys and how they got to be where they are today. And something I find to be so interconnected and profound amongst people in this space is their why usually is attributed to their own life experiences. So I love that you really dove headfirst into the space as a way of fueling a younger version of yourself, you know, healing your asthma, your allergies, and all of these adverse reactions that you were experiencing and that weren't necessarily being cured in the conventional medicine space. And I also find it so inspiring that you weren't afraid to get started in a space that didn't have a ton of traction yet. So when you got started a little over 20 years ago, not everybody was on board with naturopathic remedies. So I really want to hear how it was being a pioneer in that space. What did that look like for you?
Well, yeah, I mean, what was interesting was that when I started my practice, you know, over 20 years ago, people were talking about different herbs and things like that. I remember back when I started practicing, it was like St. John's wort was like the biggest rage, you know, for treating depression and things like that. And it worked. People started getting into more vitamins and nutrients back then, you know, and I was like, oh, I'm entering into this field right at the right time. Which was interesting too, was that when I purchased the building that I work out of, that I'm in right now, right around that time, like I think a year or two prior, right across the street, I'm in West Hartford, was they put up Whole Foods. I'm like, this is freaking awesome, you know? So I'm in the perfect location. You know, people are going to go to Whole Foods. They'll equate me with being right across the street. And yeah, it kind of took off from there, where people started being more cognizant of their health or looking at more organic foods and so forth. But yeah, people were getting more knowledge. You know, the internet was kind of just blooming around that time. So, but I'm telling you, like, the internet was like the best saving grace for my field, because people come in to see me, like my best patients are educated patients that have done their due diligence. They've kind of gone through the whole conventional medical model. They said, you know, this is not working for me. So they start doing research. They start, you know, going online, you know, surfing the net and kind of pulling up stuff. And it's, for me, I think, you know, the internet has made it really possible for me to really accelerate my learning too, just like anyone.
I remember being little and when that Whole Foods had just opened and my dad would grocery shop there, I felt like a little kid in a candy store. All of the fresh fruit and everything was so aesthetically pleasing. And how fortunate that that opened right up across the street from the building you had bought for your practice. I think that is so kismet. I also find it really special that your best patients are your most educated patients. And I think that's something a lot of practitioners in this space see, is people will really go into these conventional medicine doctors and try to find the resolution to what's happening at the core of their health, and they're unable to. And then people will come into you and you're able to treat the root cause of, you know, whatever may be going on for them. But with all that being said, I'd love for you to share with the audience a little bit more about your patient demographic. Now, are you serving more of a male clientele, a female clientele? What does that look like today?
I would say that majority of my patients are women.
Yeah.
I think, yeah, I mean, that's just a given anyway. Guys are, you know, most of the time the guys will come in here because the woman dragged them in here, their wife dragged them in here and said, you need to see this guy. And they come in hesitantly and they leave like my best friend. So they, you know, I know how to manage them, being a guy myself. And, but yeah, I would say about 75%, maybe 70% of my practice is women. And then the rest is men. And I see a lot of, you know, older patients, I see younger, I see children, I see everything from A to Z.
So I had a feeling you would say that. And with that said, I really want to take the rest of this podcast episode in a particular direction, a direction that I think the audience will be really excited about. Some background information for listeners tuning in. Frank and I, we communicate quite frequently. He helps me out in my practice to really better understand the holistic health world. I am ever evolving, growing, and changing, and he has been a major asset to me in my development. So when I asked him if he'd be interested in coming onto the podcast to talk with all of you guys, he said to me something along the lines of, Morgan, you're going to have to pick a particular topic, because if we just dive into all things health and wellness, it is going to be hours long. And he is so right about that. But here's the thing too. he didn't want me to prep him ahead of time. He said, you know what? Let's just dive in, put me on the spot. Let's see where we can go with it. So, bum, ba, da, bum. We are going to dive in to all things hormone health, which I am personally really excited about. I did a Q&A on my podcast Instagram not too long ago, and I received a ton of messages from women with questions about all things female hormones. So I'd love to dive in, and I really want to start with the basics. So if you could, want to describe to us, what exactly is a hormone?
So a hormone is basically a chemical messenger produced in the body. It's kind of how our cells talk to one another. The hormones are secreted from glands, okay? So we have the ovaries, we have the testes in men, we have the adrenal glands, we have the pituitary gland that's kind of like the master gland that kind of controls all the other glands. So when we're talking about female hormones, the key component of looking at hormones is all about balance. Just, you know, that's really what it comes down to. When you're trying to treat someone hormonally, you know, you're going to get clues that they have a hormonal problem or an imbalance in hormones because things are not going to be working properly. You know, they're going to come with certain signs and symptoms. With female hormones, it's kind of easier because female hormones are cyclical, right? They're on a 28-day cycle, ideally. Day one is the first day of a woman's period, okay? And hormone levels, the first part of the cycle, you know, day one being the first day of the period, are relatively low. And then they start to kind of ramp up as the month goes on. Now, there are secondary sources of female hormones in the body, like the adrenal glands. They're little glands that sit atop our kidneys that produce hormones that help us deal with stress, like cortisol and adrenaline and so forth. But there's also secondary source of hormones. Female hormones come from the adrenal glands. Women make estrogen from their skin cells and fat cells. And there's different forms of estrogen. There's three in general that we want to look at and identify. Some are more beneficial, some can be a little bit more toxic. So we want to kind of go through that whole spiel.
I am literally writing stuff down in my notebook. I hope for everybody listening, you have a pen and a piece of paper or even your notes app open, somewhere where you can quickly jot down some of the things he is saying, because there is truly so much to learn about our bodies. And I love that you're able to provide us with all this information. I'm not going to lie, I genuinely had no idea that we had three different types of estrogen. And so I'd love for you to dive into this a bit more because it's truly fascinating.
So there's three. There's E1, E2, and E3. So there's estriol, estradiol, and estrone, okay? And the predominant estrogen prior to menopause is an estrogen called estradiol. Okay. And estradiol is produced by the ovaries. And during pregnancy, the predominant estrogen is one called estriol. It's a little weaker estrogen, but it's more protective. And then there's one called estrone, which is actually the most toxic of the three estrogens. This is the estrogen that's predominantly produced by the skin cells, the fat cells, and secondarily by the adrenal glands. Now, prior to menopause, not a big deal. When your woman's producing this estrone, the ovaries actually convert estrone over to estradiol, kind of getting rid of that little toxic estrogen. But after menopause, when the ovaries aren't producing estrogen anymore, the dominant estrogen is that estrone. So we don't want too much of that. And we definitely don't want it by itself. We always want it balanced with progesterone because it's a little bit of a stronger type of estrogen, a little bit more stimulating. Because when you think about it, okay, why are women more prone to breast cancer after menopause? Why aren't 18-year-old women with raging hormones developing breast cancer or hormonally dependent cancers? Because it's not about the hormone itself. It's about the balance. So after menopause, they're more prone to these toxic hormones, and they're not producing progesterone to counterbalance it. So when a woman's going through perimenopause, you know, they're kind of getting to the bottom of their basket of eggs. So that's another thing. When women are born, they're born with a select number of follicles. And every month, once they start ovulating, they start releasing from one side to the next and the next. So one month, it may be on the right side. One month, it's on the left side. And as they get to the bottom of that basket of eggs, that's when they start transitioning into menopause. That's basically what initiates it. You're out of eggs. They're done. You know, and menopause should not be considered a disease process. It's a normal process. But we look at it in this country like, oh my God, I got menopause. my hair's falling out, I'm hot all the time, I'm gaining weight. And this, yeah, that's all due to imbalanced hormones. So that's when we start balancing things out. Like we talked about, you know, getting rid of toxic estrogen. One of the best ways is to make sure that the woman's not constipated, make sure she's pooping good, make sure her liver is processing things properly. And there's a lot of nutrients that are required for the body to break down and get rid of toxic forms of estrogen. One in particular is called iodine. Iodine is a trace mineral. Iodine is necessary for thyroid hormone production. When you're lacking iodine, the body is going to be more prone to have more of toxic estrogen. Iodine helps the body metabolize the toxic estrogen that stimulates the breast tissue. So I get women all the time, you know, their breasts are sore at certain times of the month. They're like, I can't even wear a bra. It's so painful. This is a prime example of an iodine deficiency. So a lot of times I'll put women with on iodine, the breast cysts, they shrink, they go away. They're perfectly fine. Okay. And so that's by modulating the body's ability to break down and detoxify toxic estrogen. The liver has to conjugate and get rid of estrogen as well, but it requires specific amino acids and nutrients. So if someone's eating a very limited diet, you know, they're not eating enough protein in their diet. They're maybe a vegan or a vegetarian. They're not getting good quality animal-based protein. Yes, they're getting some amino acids from their protein found in their vegetables and so forth, but when you look at a vegan or vegetarian diet, in order to extract the nutrients from plant-based foods, your digestive tract has to do that. And we don't have a fermentation-based digestive tract. We have a hydrochloric acid-based digestive tract. So when people say, yeah, you can get all your nutrients from plants. Yeah, in theory, if you have a you know, three stomachs or four stomachs like a cow, but we have a hydrochloric acid-based digestive tract. So we have to prepare our foods properly. And I know I'm getting a little off topic here, but I think it definitely needs talking about.
This is truly all so interesting. To kind of tie back into what you had said a couple of times, it's truly all about finding balance and homeostasis within your hormones. So I love that you were able to break some of that down for us and truly let us into some knowledge and wisdom that I'm going to safely say the majority of us had no idea about. So this is really, really neat. And to kind of veer us back on track, not that I don't love a good side tangent, because I do, let's break down the female cycle a bit more. Let's do a 101. So let's say some women are listening, they're trying to learn more about their cycle. You explain to us that the first day of the cycle starts with the bleed. Let's jump back in there and let's hear all of the goodness that you have to share with us.
So typically, early phase of the cycle, we call it the follicular phase, okay, where a follicle is developing in the ovaries and levels of hormones start to ramp up. And by day 14, which is ovulation, we should see a big spike in estrogen levels, okay? So estrogen causes the ovaries to release a follicle. And that follicle is released and it's making its way down that fallopian tube. And if there's fertilization, what ends up happening, then that follicle then implants into the uterus. Well, we go one step backwards. When that follicle is released on day 14 or around there, the release of the follicle causes the body to then start producing a secondary hormone called progesterone. And that progesterone, one of the roles of progesterone is to ready the uterus for potential implantation. So it causes a thickening of the endometrial lining. So as that egg is working its way down the fallopian tube, if there's fertilization, by the time it reaches the uterus, it has a nice place to implant into. Now, if there's no fertilization, then what ends up happening is that progesterone levels will taper off. And with the withdrawal of progesterone, we see a sloughing off of that uterine lining. A woman gets her period, and then it starts over again. Now, if there is implantation, then we see progesterone levels take off. That's that secondary hormone. And we're going to talk extensively today about progesterone because it's one of the most underappreciated hormones. And we kind of forget about it. We talk about estrogen and so forth, but progesterone is very, very crucial. It's kind of the counter hormone. Remember about balance. We need to balance the estrogen with the progesterone.
So when we start to see that imbalance between estrogen and progesterone, is that when most women will start to experience those icky premenstrual symptoms, PMS, that just is unenjoyable, unpleasant, and really gives periods a bad rap?
So in certain situations, some women can have PMS symptoms or, other problems prior to their menstrual cycle. Typically, that's caused by a woman not producing enough progesterone and being maybe estrogen dominant, where they're producing too much estrogen. That can cause irritability. It can cause edginess. It can cause a little excessive bleeding or maybe a light period. It can cause all different problems when there's an imbalance there, because progesterone, I call progesterone kind of like the body's Valium hormone. It kind of chills you out. It relaxes the uterus. So if a woman's developing menstrual cramping and bloating and all these other symptoms, that's typically a sign of estrogen dominance and progesterone deficiency, not getting enough progesterone.
This is truly so fascinating. And the more I hear you speak and share, the more I just think about how we really should have learned this, the fundamentals in health class in middle school and high school. So if you could, would you break down for us why a woman would experience having more estrogen than she would progesterone and how this would shape her experience with her menstrual cycle?
Well, we have to talk about the environment, because there's a lot of things in the environment that mimic estrogen. Okay, like plastics and PCBs and things like that. There's all these estrogen mimickers that are in the environment. You know, pesticides that they spray all over our food that we eat on a daily basis. So we're getting these exogenous synthetic estrogens that are dominating in the body. And the problem with that is that any hormonally dependent tissue, estrogen dependent tissue, when you're getting surged with too much of these fake estrogens, they can overstimulate these tissues and it can lead to cysts in the breast. It can lead to fibroid tumors. It can lead to endometriosis. It can lead to ovarian cysts and so forth. So progesterone is very crucial to kind of counterbalance that. And also doing things nutritionally to aid in the breakdown and elimination of estrogen. So one of the best things to help kind of reduce toxic estrogen is to prevent constipation in a woman. That's how your body gets rid of estrogen. So if a woman's constipated, what ends up happening is their body's trying to get rid of that estrogen, and it will actually recirculate and pull back into the body unless they're eliminating properly. So, proper detoxification elimination is very, very crucial when we're kind of dealing with balancing out hormones.
So with all of that said, it kind of leads me to this place where I feel testing could be really vital for a woman if she's experiencing these symptoms that now you've described pertain to a hormonal imbalance, maybe an estrogen dominance, a lack in progesterone. So tell us what hormone testing would look like for a woman, because hormone testing is something that is being talked about quite frequently in the holistic wellness space. And I just want them to hear from your perspective what that should look like.
So when I check hormones in women, a lot of times I go by their patient's clinical signs and symptoms. When in the month do they develop symptoms and whatnot? And I can kind of determine what's going on. If they're progesterone deficient, estrogen dominant, if they're estrogen deficient, they'll start developing all different symptoms on top of that. But one of the best times to check a woman's hormones is on day 21 of their cycle, 7 days prior to their expected period. Why is that? We already talked about on day 14, the body surges estrogen, causes a release of a follicle from one ovary. The follicle gets released. The body starts producing progesterone. The progesterone thickens that endometrial lining. So we have day 14, and then day 21 is when progesterone really peaks in the body. It should be at its highest point. And estrogen should be kind of moderate at that point. Okay. It shouldn't be dominating over the progesterone. The progesterone should be the highest. And if there's implantation, that progesterone just skyrockets. It just goes from there during pregnancy. Like I said, if there's no implantation, that progesterone drops off and we're good to go. Okay. A lot of times what I'll do is if a woman's cycle is predictable, they kind of know when they're ovulating, they know when day 21 is, they know when their next menstrual cycle is going to start, I'll have them go to the lab and we'll run all of their hormones on day 21. And then I have a range that I like to see it. that range is not based upon any, it's not based upon population studies, which is pretty much how the laboratory kind of designates the reference ranges. So I'd like to get into that a little bit, and then we'll kind of talk about the levels of hormones. So when you go to the lab, when you send, you know, when a patient gets sent to a lab like Quest or LabCorp, they'll run the blood work and they have to determine what the optimal range is. And a lot of times those ranges are very, very broad, because they're based primarily on population studies. So they would take the last 1,000 women, we'll say, that have been to that lab, and let's say their average progesterone level on day 21 is, I don't know, 10, okay? And then they go 2 standard deviations to the right, 2 to the left, they make a bell-shaped curve, and if you fall within that very broad range, you're considered normal in contrast to other women in your age demographic. The problem with that is that you're not comparing that patient to a population of healthy women per se. You're basically comparing her to a population of sick people. Because if you take a look at the people in the country, a lot of people are sick. They're not doing so well. Reference ranges is based more on statistical ranges and less so on wellness ranges. 2 standard deviations right, 2 to the left, bell-shaped curve. You fall in the middle, you're good to go. Well, what if the range starts at 2 and ends at 30? Okay, well, anywhere in there is considered normal? Not necessarily. So my ranges, I really tighten them up. And I base them on clinical research. And after 20-something years in practice, gotten pretty good at determining what the optimal range is. So I'll look at a woman on day 21, and we'll look at their estrogen levels, we'll look at their progesterone levels, and we want to see it in a certain range. You know, and if it's out of that range and the person's exhibiting symptoms, then we go ahead and do treatments.
Okay, so let me break this down a little bit, maybe reiterate some of what you said as I digest all of this amazing information. So a woman starts to experience symptoms that we now can allude to a hormone imbalance. She goes to a naturopath like yourself, and she knows when day 21 of her cycle is, and now she knows that that's when she needs to go have her labs drawn. So she goes, she has her labs drawn, and it comes back that she does, in fact, have a hormone imbalance. Maybe she's estrogen dominant. So from there, she's going to want to treat it, right? She's going to want to be back to feeling good in her body. She wants to eliminate this imbalance. So next steps would be treatment. How do we get her on the right track? What would this look like?
So how we balance hormones, we kind of mentioned, alluded to it a little bit about, you know, proper elimination. You know, so that's top of the list. Number 2, cholesterol being a backbone molecule to form hormones. Well, cholesterol is a fat, and we want to make sure we're getting adequate dietary fat in the diet, you know, from good quality sources. And because hormones are made from specific types of fats. We need essential fats, omega-3s, you know, some omega-6s. We need saturated fats and so forth. So, you know, in this country, we've kind of demonized fat. I think we've kind of gotten away from that more so now. But in the past, I mean, it was like fat was the enemy. It was the demon. It's, you know, makes you fat. It does this, it does that. But there's nothing further from the truth. You know, I think the people that have embraced more of a low fat type of lifestyle, and especially women, I find that they have the most hormonal imbalances. Because now their body, their factory, their ovaries, their adrenal glands, whatever, are not getting the raw material it needs to make adequate hormones. The quality of the fat is also crucial. I think that people in this country overconsume cheap seed oils, vegetable oils, they call them, canola oil, soybean oil, peanut oil, you know, all these other crappy oils. The body doesn't really like to use that to make hormones, okay? Those oils are very prone to become rancid and toxic. And so when your body, if that's all you're getting, then the body says, okay, well, I guess we'll use these to make cell membranes and to make hormones and so forth. But you got to think the hormones and everything are not going to be of good quality. So that's one of the first things that I do a lot of times when we're talking with women about hormone balance is I screen them for their fatty acid profile. We do a blood test to see, you know, what's their ratio of omega-3 to omega-6, and are they getting enough good saturated fats in their diet? And we go ahead and we approach that. We address that. The next thing that we kind of look at from a hormonal balance standpoint is other dietary things like sugar and carbohydrates in your diet. So there's a condition known as polycystic ovarian syndrome, and it's rampant. I see at least on a monthly basis, I can, you know, a handful of women that come in, new patients with diagnosis of PCOS or polycystic ovarian syndrome. So I'll explain to you exactly what that is, because it's the biggest disruptor of hormones. So essentially, we talked about, you know, women ovulate on day 14. Okay. With polycystic ovarian syndrome, what ends up happening, and this is induced entirely 100% by diet and lifestyle. So if a woman is prone to what's called insulin resistance or pre-diabetes and so forth, that means that they are taking in more carbohydrate, starches, and sugar than what their body can burn or utilize. Their body's producing a lot of insulin in response to that. So insulin is used to clear sugar from the blood, to get it into the cells, to be utilized as an energy source. And when someone has insulin resistance or, you know, pre-diabetes or diabetes, they're going to crank out a boatload of insulin. And what insulin can will do is insulin in the body in women can cause, in the fat cells, cause the body to convert estrogen over to testosterone. In men, the opposite happens. In their fat cells, they can end up converting testosterone over to estrogen. If a woman is producing more testosterone than estrogen, what ends up happening is they don't ovulate correctly on day 14. So they're not producing, they're not mustering up enough estrogen because a lot of it's getting lost to the conversion to testosterone. So yes, women will produce some testosterone, but we don't want too much. We don't want women walking around with a beard, you know, so in a greasy, oily face and, you know, and things like that. We don't want that, and body hair everywhere. So a woman with that's prone to PCOS, what ends up happening is on ovulation, they don't muster up enough estrogen to release a follicle properly. So what ends up happening when that follicle should be released on day 14, instead of it being released and being, you know, shot down that fallopian tube ready to get fertilized, it forms a cyst on the outside of the ovary. And every month, if this happens, the patient, the woman's not ovulating correctly. So they're basically infertile. So PCOS is one of the primary reasons for infertility in this country. And so we'll see these cysts form on the ovaries. And it looks like, you know, a bunch of grapes will form, okay? So each month these cysts form, and the woman probably won't have a period. Or if they do have a period, it's pretty light, because remember, ovulation causes the body to produce progesterone, which then the progesterone causes a thickening of the endometrial lining. If they're not ovulating correctly, there's no progesterone being released. So this woman is progesterone deficient, estrogen deficient, but testosterone dominant. Okay. So a lot of these women, they'll come into my office and they may grow some facial hair and stuff like that. And their doctor says, oh, no worries, just get it waxed. Okay. Or they'll say, okay, we need to deal with these hormonal imbalances. Let's put you on the pill. So they put this woman on the pill. So their body's now relying on a synthetic version of hormones. That's whatever's found in that pill. So that's another aspect. So when we're looking at diet and lifestyle, you can reverse this whole process. You put someone on a low carbohydrate, moderate protein, higher good fat diet. And that will in turn cause a reduction in insulin levels, which then in turn will prevent the conversion of estrogen over to testosterone. Okay, so that's the whole process there. And then a lot of times we'll do some herbs, we'll do some nutrients and so forth to kind of correct a lot of this. We'll do things to help lower the insulin levels in the body.
Wow. I am truly learning so much from you in this quick span of time. And I know my community of gals listening are genuinely so grateful for this abundance of knowledge that you are so graciously sharing with us. I love that you broke down what the treatment could look like for a woman experiencing hormone imbalance. I feel that with social media being so prevalent in our day-to-day lives, there is a lot of fear-mongering surrounding hormone imbalances and what rebalancing the hormones may look like. So you really explained it to us in a way that was not scary and seemed attainable. I really enjoyed that you touched on PCOS and all that that entails. That is something that is being talked about a lot in the media right now. And you did mention herbs too. So being that you are a naturopath, this is a conversation we are bound to lean into. So if you wouldn't mind, would you like to share one herb or a few that you're really loving, especially for women who are looking to balance their hormones?
I love the herb berberine. It has great effects on blood sugar lowering. We look at minerals like chromium and vanadium, and biotin works really great. And we use a lot of different B vitamins to help regulate blood sugar and lower insulin levels. So, you know, we're talking about hormones, but then you have to also talk about the other aspect, which is other hormones like insulin and testosterone and so forth, and in blood sugar management. So it makes a really big difference, you know, so pretty cool stuff.
Truly so amazing. Thank you for sharing all of that with us. Now, I feel like it could be the perfect time to ask you a question from a listener. So not too long ago on my podcast Instagram, I put up a story where I asked listeners if they had any questions that they wanted answered on upcoming podcast episodes. And I received one that is entirely out of my scope of practice, so I feel it's perfect for you, and it's in regards to hormone health. So I had a listener write in that she has been on the hormonal birth control pill for the past 10 years. She's now married, and she and her husband are thinking about conceiving. They're thinking about next steps in their relationship. And she wants to obviously get off the pill so they could dive into that. But she's really scared about how hormonally imbalanced she'll be, if that'll impact, you know, the process of getting pregnant. So do you have any advice for her, given your expertise in this field?
So just like what we talked about already, they'd get off the pill and see what happens. Just kind of track what their actual cycle is going to be like. It may take a couple months to kind of get into the groove, especially if they've been on, you know, hormones for 10 years or longer. So we kind of go through a couple months and kind of get a semblance of what's going on. You know, the first couple months are kind of touch and go. There may not be a cycle, or maybe a little wacky. We have to kind of find a trend of where it is. And then we would go into potentially, you know, running blood work to determine where the balance is, or just kind of going by the clinical signs and symptoms. You know, I can pick up pretty easily at this point if a person's estrogen dominant, progesterone deficient, and whatnot. So we would start there, you know, gather as much information as possible. When I run blood work, I'm not just looking at female hormones. I'm looking at thyroid hormone. We're looking at adrenal hormones, because the thyroid, you know, I can do a whole podcast just on thyroid alone. The thyroid, little gland in your throat that regulates the rate at which your cells burn up calories that you take in from your diet. And your thyroid gland, if it's imbalanced, your female hormones will be imbalanced. And if your thyroid's off, your adrenal glands can be off. So it's a trifecta. You have to look at all three of them together. You can't look at them in a vacuum like most conventional doctors will do. You have to look at them all together, because one will affect the other, affect the other. And so when you're balancing hormones, you have to balance all three out, all three glands. So that's something that we would look at. I would do extensive blood work. We do some dietary intervention. We kind of look at what the diet's like. You know, is this person eating a boatload of sugar and carbohydrates? What's their insulin levels look like? So we're going to look at this whole big picture here.
Thank you so much for answering that question so thoroughly. I feel like you truly provided her with some tangible takeaways that she can bring with her as she enters this new chapter of her life. Now, I have to ask, and I know listeners tuning in are going to want to know this too, what does it look like for a patient who comes in to see you? What does that process of being a patient of Dr. Aieta's look like?
So when I see a patient in my practice, I say, listen, tell me your story. Well, let's go through it all. Give me the breakdown, complaints, concerns. Tell me your story. When we're done, I say, the first thing I say is, okay, I got half your story. They're like, I just told you everything. I said, no, I got half of your story, because the other half comes when I run the proper lab work to investigate further your clinical complaints, your subjective complaints. So we'll go ahead and run the blood work, targeted blood work, to kind of identify, okay, we're looking at this, we're looking at that. And then a lot of times I'll do a focus physical exam too, you know, looking for different things, you know, that may clue me into something that I may miss on blood work or whatnot. Because once again, blood work is not the end all be all. So you have to be a detective. As a good physician, you have to take all the information that you're given, what the patient says to you, what the patient looks like, you know, physical exam findings. You know, if you have to do any imaging, you know, you can do CAT scans, MRIs. I do all those all the time for certain things. Blood work, urinalysis testing. We do food sensitivity testing. I mean, there's, you know, I can test. So I gather this big picture. And then at our second visit, which is typically 2 weeks after our first, that's when I present it all to the patient. I say, all right, this is what's going on. This is how we correct it. This is going to be your dietary stuff. These are your dietary supplements. This is your lifestyle stuff. This is your exercise. We lay it all out and I say, go have at it. I'll see you back in 6 weeks, which is kind of a midway point where I check in with the patient and say, all right, how's everything going? Do you have questions, concerns? Where are we at? And then I send them away for an additional 6 weeks. And at the end of that additional 6 weeks, that's 3 months in between, they rerun the blood work and we see our progress. And we look at what, you know, so I base the secondary blood work on whatever was off on the first blood test, you know, so I'll repeat just those things. And then we kind of go from there. And then ultimately we get the person to the level of health that they need to be at, albeit it all hinges upon their compliance and their ability to want to do this stuff, you know? So, and I tell people right off the bat, I said, listen, I'm going to give you the ultimate treatment plan. Whether you stick with it or not, or you do it, is up to you. It's just as good as you want to feel. You do it 50% of the time, you're going to feel 50% better. You do it 2% of the time, you're only feel 2% better. You know, so I leave that up to the patient, and not everyone is inclined to do it 100%. We're all human. You know, it's like they want to be able to deviate and do this and do that. No one's perfect. So I said, listen, it's better than what you were doing previously. You know, so we make the best of it. And that's the big thing about this type of medicine, that it's not a quick fix. It's not a one size fits all. And it does take effort and, you know, the patient has to take their health into their own hands. Yeah, so that's kind of how I would approach that whole patient type of thing.
And out of curiosity, how long does it take you to come up with this person's personalized wellness plan? Like, is this hours in the making, or have you been doing this long enough where you're able to come up with it pretty quickly?
Okay. I do it on the spot because I've been doing it long enough. So I can basically, like, when a patient comes back for their second visit, a lot of times I don't even look at the blood work until I'm sitting down with the patient. I may glance over it, but I'm not thinking about what I'm going to do until I'm actually in the patient's in my face right there. So they came in and I said, all right, you can take notes. You can record me. You can do whatever you want. I will provide them with notes, you know, so I type up their treatment plan as we go along. And I say, okay, this is the blood work. And I go through each and every marker with them in detail. And I talk to them about how that pertains to their clinical signs and symptoms that they exhibited and explained to me at their initial visit. So I say, you know, you remember when you said X, Y, and Z? Well, this is why. This is off, and this is off, and this is that. So we start going through it all and I kind of break it down for them. And at the end, I say, okay, well, before we talk about what type of supplements and herbs or nutrients that we're going to do or hormone replacement or whatever we decide to do, we're going to talk about your individualized diet plan. So we talk about diet first and I give them a very specific individualized diet, give them a lot of handouts and so forth. Then I get into, okay, well, you need vitamin D, you need B12 based upon your blood work. We need this, we need that. And I come up with a plan and then I send them on their way. I have a full pharmacy of products that I actually manufacture myself to my specifications because there's lots of stuff out there, but a lot of it's junk, a lot of it's garbage, and there's not a lot of quality control in this industry. And the products that I have formulated for my patients, and I take them myself, my family takes them, They're all manufactured to my specific needs and wants and the potency, the purity. I have an independent lab tested. So I know that if I'm treating a patient with cancer, I'm not going to give them a supplement that potentially will give them cancer because it's toxic. You know, so it's pretty important, the quality of the vitamins and so forth, the quality of the nutrients, just as much as it as the quality of the food that you're having people eat. You know, and the big thing is like, oh, well, you're pumping people full of supplements. Can't they get it all from their diet? Yeah, they can. But in a perfect world, you know, we don't eat perfect all the time. I try to eat pretty good. I mean, I try and practice what I preach, but I still have nutrient deficiencies that I need to supplement with other, you know, with vitamins and minerals and nutrients, you know, like vitamin D, for example. I think everyone on the planet should be taking vitamin D unless they're living in a tropical island and they're just like getting vitamin D consistently on a daily basis all the time. Because, you know, I tried to get away with not taking vitamin D one summer and my levels dropped into the toilet and I was tan. I was outside. I was, you know, in the good weather and, you know, getting sun exposure, but my vitamin D was still low. So I take vitamin D every day, you know? So, and then, you know, we have to look at the food supply too. Even if you're eating organic and non-GMO and this and that, a lot of the food is depleted of nutrients. And a lot of it hinges upon our ability to absorb these nutrients or break it down and so forth, you know? So the integrity of your digestive tract makes a big difference. So you may not be able to extract all the nutrients that you require from food alone.
So going off of that, are there any supplements that you would recommend every single woman take, regardless of where her hormone levels are at on a blood panel?
Yeah, I mean, we start off, we talked about good fats. I think everyone should be taking fish oil. I think omega-3s are crucial. You know, you can get fish in your diet, but a lot of the fish is toxic. I mean, it's loaded with heavy metals. Unless you're eating, you know, wild caught fish, a lot of it's farm raised. They're grown in pens. They're fed grains. Same thing holds true for, you know, animal based foods like chicken or beef or pork. If you're eating factory farm meat, you're getting the lowest of the low. If you're eating beef and it's not grass fed and grass finished, if you're not eating chicken that's organic or pasture raised and things like that, you're getting the lowest form. And the nutrient content is going to be very, very low in that. So, you know, I talk to patients extensively about quality of food and whatnot. So back to your question, you know, so fish oil, that's top of the list. For hormonal balance, I think getting on a proper B vitamin is essential. An activated form of B vitamins that will help the body metabolize hormones. I think that's pretty crucial. But, you know, without running blood work, it's hard to know. It's hard to really give a specific plan because remember, everyone's an individual. People ask me all the time, well, what should I be taking for supplements? I'm like, I don't know. I got to work you up completely. I mean, I can give you some generic recommendations. I think one of the most underappreciated nutrients that you could possibly take is magnesium. I think magnesium is so crucial, especially for women, especially if they have dysmenorrhea or cramps with their period. So magnesium is like one of my go-tos. I use tons of magnesium and there's different forms of it. You got to use the right form. Otherwise, you're taking just a laxative. You're going to poop your brains out. The best form that I consider is called magnesium glycinate. The absolute worst form is magnesium oxide. It's like eating rocks. It's just a laxative form. Or magnesium citrate. It's better than oxide, but it's also a laxative form. So looking at that, looking at the quality of the vitamins and so forth is really, really crucial. So when patients try to do this on their own, they get to a certain level and then they get overwhelmed. So that's, as a naturopathic physician who's holistically oriented, that's kind of my goal with my patients is to totally educate them on every aspect of this. I've done the research. I live it myself and, you know, my family lives it. So I can kind of be a good spokesperson for a healthy diet and lifestyle.
I think you bring so much value to this space. You are a wealth of knowledge. As I mentioned before, I learn something new every single time I talk to you. So I am so happy that you came on today and you shared all of this information regarding hormone health. I cannot wait for the next time you come on to dive in deeper to another topic.
Yep. Anything you want to talk about, we'll talk about.
Amazing.
I don't discriminate on topics. We can talk about anything from A to Z. And, you know, it's in my brain right now. The reason why it's in my brain, why I can rattle this stuff off like at will, because I talk to patients all day long. And this is basically what I do. It's like a professor talking to a room full of students. they're not going to miss a beat. They've been doing it for, let's say, 20 years. They're not going to have to even refer to notes because they've been saying it for so long, you know?
There are so many topics that we can dive into together in the future. I know off the top of my head, digestive health is probably one that we can do pretty soon. I've gotten quite a few questions in my DMs regarding that, and I'd love your expertise in answering those. This has truly been so, so fun, as I mentioned. And in closing out the episode, I want you to leave the audience with one piece of advice, if you can. I know that's a hard question, but one piece of advice, what would it be?
Listen, question everything. Do your own research. Find people that you trust and ask them and then go from there. Because if you're just following the mainstream narrative, you're not going to be healthy. I promise you, because majority of the population, we see it, you see it. People are not healthy in this day and age, especially in this country. And it's all self-induced.
We need to get more people into offices like yours where they can see a naturopathic provider. And so say somebody listens to this podcast episode and they want to be a patient of yours.
Yeah.
Where can they find you?
It's pretty easy. It's draaieta.com. It's draaieta.com. Okay. And so everything's there. Everything's up there. You know, how to get a hold of me. There's lots of videos up there. I have a full, you know, full supplement store on there. I have lots of free information. I'm on all the socials. It's just at Dr. Aida on all of them. So I'm, you know, I try to post as much as I can, but you know, you get a little burnt out on it. I try to get the information out by doing, you know, podcasts like this and trying to put out the information. And, you know, one of the best ways to get information on a regular basis is to go to my website and sign up for my newsletter. I send out a newsletter a couple times a month and on different topics. Some of it's, you know, talking about different supplements. I'll send this podcast right here out to everyone on my email list to take a look at. There's several thousand people on that list. So, you know, we'll get that out there. So people need to hear it. You know, we can do it one person at a time as long, you know, people start embracing this. And people love this type of medicine. They deserve the proper care.
This is what people are craving. They want to understand all of this. So thank you so much for taking the time to hop on the mic. And I can't wait for the next time we chat.
Sounds good.
All right, guys, that is all for today's episode. I hope that you enjoyed it and that you took some notes and gathered some valuable insights from the conversation. Dr. Aida and I have some really exciting things coming up. We're looking to partner in different ways and bring different things to our communities. So I really look forward to being able to share more about that with you soon. I hope you guys have a beautiful rest of your week. I hope the sun is shining. I hope you're doing all of the fall festivities because it is just absolutely gorgeous out. And we'll chat next week. Bye. Thank you so much for listening. A new episode of Recipe for Radiance will drop every Thursday. Be sure to subscribe and rate the podcast. I want to hear from you, so follow at Recipe for Radiance Podcast on Instagram and send in all the topics and questions you'd like to hear about. I'm so grateful to have you as a part of this amazing journey. I'll see you next week.